In the Senate, you need 60 votes in order for something to get to the president's desk for a signature. The Republicans have 53 votes. They need 7 Democrats to agree with what they're doing. They don't have 7 people. And so what has happened in the past is there's a negotiation. There's a way that you meet in the middle, or if you can't meet in the middle, there's a give and take. And you know what? It's kind of like little kids when they realize that they're going to lose the game of Monopoly, they flip the card table over.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Heartland Politics podcast here on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. And I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and it's always a delight and a pleasure to have a sitting member of Congress as our guest, regardless of party or where they're from. And today I'm very happy to be joined by our congressman here in the 17th Congressional District in Illinois, Eric Sorensen. Congressman, thank you so much. I know it's a very busy time, but it means a lot that you're willing to take a little time to be the guest today.
No, Robin, thank you for having me on. But, you know, it's to talk about the things I think that we, you know, we need to talk about more, right? I say this a lot. I'm like, we need to stop talking about the politics that is a trap. You know, there's so much of politics that are traps nowadays. I'm like, walk around those, but instead talk about what we value, right? I'm like, if we talk more about our shared values, we're going to get a lot farther than if we just argue stupid, divisive politics.
Well, you know me and you know my commitment here. I don't ask gotcha questions, and I don't try to trip you up and say, Eric, you said this 10 years ago. And it's, I just, you know what, if in all due respect, if my listeners want that, you got, you know, MSNBC and Fox. I like to have an adult conversation here for my listeners, treat my listeners as adults, and just ask
good
questions.
Come on your show.
Yeah. And let my guests have answers that aren't, you know, 30-second sound bites. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so you probably don't have much going on these days, do you? Just kind of taking it easy. And in all seriousness, it's a very serious issue, and I know you know that, you're dealing with it. But we're just for a transparency for our listeners, we are recording this on Tuesday, so there may be some things change between now and when the show airs. But can
the world
you just
seems
give
to
us
change every day, Robin?
I know it. I know it. It used to be a 24-hour news cycle. Now it's every second. But is there anything you can share the latest on the government shutdown? That's obviously the big issue that we're dealing with here.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I started my day. The alarm went off at 4:30 a.m. Because today's an honor flight day in the Quad Cities. So many of our veterans get their chance to hop on board a plane at the Quad City Airport, fly to Washington, D.C., to get on a bus, to go to the memorials that are dedicated to veterans in the past and in the present. And, you know, I'll tell you, a lot of people probably don't realize this, that, you know, I pay attention to whenever there's a Quad Cities honor flight, whenever there's a Peoria honor flight, or whenever vets roll out of Rockford. And I'm like, it's not something that, you know, I'd like to, when I try to do this work, the most important work is not something that needs to be on TV. It doesn't need to be on podcasts. But I'll tell you what, this morning, it was being at the Quad City Airport and talking with veterans who had served even in Korea. There was a Korea War veteran that I talked with this morning about the reason, you know, why they're going on this trip, why they served. You know, I ask that question a lot. I'm like, why did you serve? Right? That's something that we don't maybe think about enough. Right? You know, why did you do that? What did you learn? What do you hope to learn today when you go to Washington? Right? When was the last time you were in Washington? To have a veteran tell me, the last time I was in Washington, I was at Walter Reed and I don't remember it. There's something so impactful about that. right? And I'm like, so doing that, Robin, the first part of my day, sending them off on that was incredibly important for me. But then it was also incredibly important for them that they saw their member of Congress that got there early in the morning to shake their hand before they went and did this thing. And then after that, it's continuing up. My chief of staff, we had a couple of meetings. It was bringing together an environmental roundtable that I did. It's talking with constituents about their SNAP benefits. It's talking with constituents about their health care possibly going away. I mean, that's the work of a member of Congress, even though the government is shut down. And I think some people just think that, oh, their member of Congress doesn't do anything for them, right? And I'm like, I kind of challenge sometimes, I challenge my team. And I'm like, if people don't understand what we do, what our work is about, if people don't hear about it, they're going to assume that we're not doing anything for them. So we do have to talk about those things. And that's a challenge for all of us. And it's even more challenging right now because you have a political system today that has so many booby traps and pitfalls.
I'll mention just from a personal angle. My dad was a World War II and Korean War veteran, and he went on the honor flight about 15 years ago. It's such a great program,
Wow.
and I'm glad he got to do that before he passed away. But I'm very glad, just putting all politics aside, I'm glad you take the time to do that, because that's a very important program for our veterans. I guess it, I don't know. I mean, you just talked about people you talk to. I talk to people regularly from both parties, and I try to not make politics just center my life, my moods every day, like a lot of people do. But I get the same thing from people on both sides. Everybody's just worn out from all this. And I continue to believe, and I think you do too, based on our previous conversations, that there's a vast middle here that just is tired of all this bickering and wants to just kind of get back to some kind of normalcy. I mean, I guess I'm talking more than thinking of a question, but it's just, is that what you find, that whether the right or the left, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, there's things we agree on that should form the basis of our leaders coming together and moving beyond some of these artificial, conflicts that seem, they seem more attuned, let me put it this way, they seem more attuned to our elected officials and parties to get somewhat of a partisan advantage than really what's going on in the country.
I think you're right. I think back to, like the origins of why I sought the votes for the people for me to go and do this job, right? So like, why did I quit the only job I wanted when I was a kid to run for the Congress when so many people said, don't do that, you're going to mess everything up. There's no way that somebody like you can win that seat. And I had to persevere through that, right? But then also, there is an incredible value that people like that I have that I get to do this work in Congress without having a background in politics, right? It's different because, yes, I am a Democrat, absolutely, right? But because I don't have the political baggage, it means I can have the relationship with those other people, right? And I'm like, I can go to that place and have eyes wide open to say, is there a way that we can work together on one particular thing? It doesn't mean that we have to agree on everything, right? It's just one thing. And so I'm like, so now I've gotten to the point today where it's 2025 and I've had enough of the partisan political games. I want to find solutions to problems. I'm like, we need to be able to open the government so that the government does the work of the people, right? But it is very simple While some politicians will say, oh, this is the Schumer shutdown, or some people will say this is the Republicans' shutdown, right? Let's just take both of those out for a moment. Go back to sixth grade social studies. In sixth grade social studies, I had Mrs. Ralston, and she was great. Real fast, you had to take notes, and she was a really fast chalkboard writer. But I remember from her that in the House of Representatives, you need a simple majority. In the Senate, you need 60 votes in order for something to get to the president's desk for a signature. I learned that in sixth grade. We all learned that in sixth grade. That's what's occurring today, right? The continuing resolution, whether you liked what was in it or not, it passed through the House on a simple majority because the Republicans have the majority and Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the House. It gets to the Senate. The Republicans have 53 votes. They need 7 Democrats to agree with what they're doing. They don't have 7 people. And so what has happened in the past is there's a negotiation. There's a way that you meet in the middle, or if you can't meet in the middle, there's a give and take. And you know what? It's kind of like little kids when they realize that they're going to lose the game of Monopoly, they flip the card table over and they say, I'm leaving. And they left. And what we're saying here is we're saying, no, negotiate with us. All we're asking for is that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, remains affordable. That's all we're asking for. And it's not something new. It's not that we're asking for those who are in our country illegally to get free health care because they're making that up. Right? That's not what this is about. This is about to continue what has already occurred because everyone is going to lose out on their health care. 17,000 people in Illinois, just in Illinois 17, I should say, 17,000 people in Illinois 17 are going to see their health care costs soar. And I'm just like, I'm not going to stand around and allow that to happen. And now what we're seeing, Robin, this is a long answer to your question, I know. But now what we're seeing is an administration that says, if you don't deal with us, we're just going to make it terrible. We're going to make it miserable for people. And I'm just like, now we're seeing like SNAP benefits. Anybody that has a link card in their pocket, that link card isn't going to have any money on it in a few days. And I'm like,
November 1st.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've talked with those single moms. I went to 2 different grocery stores yesterday and talked with them about what it means. And a lady says, a lady was picking up a gallon of milk and 18 eggs. It was a dozen and a half of eggs at a Save-A-Lot on West 8th Street in Rockford. And she said, I'm trying to make my SNAP benefits go as far as possible. And she goes, I can buy these 2 things tonight. You know, it really made me think twice. You know, when on our way back from Rockford, we stopped in Dixon at the Arby's and I got a beef and cheddar, right? It should make all of us think twice about, we may have it easy. And I think about it too, like, I'm like, if you don't think that we have a healthcare crisis in this country, then you are so lucky because that means that you haven't had a healthcare crisis in your family. They exist all the time. We have to lead with compassion today.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WBIK, Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen, who represents the Quad City area, the 17th District. We're talking about the government shutdown. It sounds like, I guess, your position sounds pretty firm. And all due respect, I can respect that. What are the, but, and the Republicans sound equally firm on the reasons for the shutdown and the changes mm-hmm. they want to see in Medicaid. Where's the possible compromise lie? I mean, I've read about possibly reducing income eligibility for these enhanced Obamacare subsidies. I've seen other things. Is there anything you're hearing about from leadership as we speak of possible meeting in the middle to get this resolved? Or is this going to have to be one side wins or the other?
I think there needs to be negotiation, right? So, and a lot of this is occurring outside of the chamber where I serve. It's occurring in the Senate, right? But here's the thing is, Leader Thune needs to allow Democrats in the room to negotiate, right? So far, he's not there, right? And a lot of that is, and we heard President Trump say this. He's like, I don't want the government to open up. Keep it shut down. You know, and then he left on a golf trip. And then he said it again. And then he left on an Asia trip. Right. So until Donald Trump tells Senator Thune to do anything, nothing's going to happen. Right. And so it's like, what we're seeing now is, like, for instance, SNAP benefits. Like, I serve in the Agriculture Committee. Right. I understand the appropriations process of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, right? Where that funding comes from, because guess what? We appropriate that funding. It's there. The crazy part about this, Robin, that people don't realize is the money is already there. It's ready to go out. It was ready to go out to the states on the 25th of every month. A government shutdown didn't make that money disappear. It's there. They have chosen to not allocate the funds to the states. And then the states put it onto the link card. Okay? So my question is why? And so I led a letter to Secretary Rawlins saying, why are you doing this? Now, in any time up to this administration and this year, we would have gotten a response. If a member of Congress writes a letter to a secretary, you get a response. There is no response this year. There's no response from the executive branch at all. And so now moving forward, we need to make sure that the funding, and those are taxpayer dollars, right? We need to make sure that the taxpayer dollars are getting to the people who need it, who deserve it. You know, and if you want to have a conversation about how we can make the SNAP program work better for people, if you want to talk about how we can make it so that healthier options or locally sourced, locally grown, so our farmers are able to take part in the program, I'm all for it. But you can't hold hungry people hostage. That's what's happening on November 1st.
I'm going to ask this question, and I hope it doesn't cause any needless alarm, because I'm somebody that flies, not all the time, not as much as you do, but I've read stories about delays in airports, and of course, in your district, there's four bigger airport, regional type airports. Are you hearing anything of delays or any issues with air traffic control in any of those?
No, I've talked with, with not only the air traffic controllers, but with the organizers of the union. And they're secure. They are committed. They are public servants. We need to make sure that we continue to support them. The flying public, we need to do that, right? We need to make sure that there's a way that we can take care of our TSA agents, and those that are in the air traffic control tower. What we're seeing today is as we go farther and farther into a government shutdown, we're asking more and more of those public servants. And they're going to get exhausted. We already knew before the government shutdown that air traffic controllers were already working 6-day weeks. They were already on a hiring freeze. This administration put them on a hiring freeze before the government shutdown. So now when you look at an administration that wants to cause mass chaos, they know that they're going to be able to cause mass chaos because we're already so thin as it is. But I'll tell you, this congressional district, we have four commercial airports. It's a very unique congressional district that we have that. right? So I have the Chicago-Rockford International Airport, I have the Quad City International Airport, I have the Peoria International Airport, and I have the Central Illinois Regional Airport. So we have
normal.
Four different airports with four TSAs, four groups of people at air traffic control towers. They're showing up for us, and now it's time that Washington shows up for them.
Is I just saw where the American Federation of Government Employees came out and urged, it's a major union representing a lot of government employees, federal government employees came out and urged. It seemed to me like they were urging the Democrats to maybe agree to get back in, support this resolution and get back in. Is there anything you can share on that? Is there, of course, again, as a House member, you've already done your work to a degree, but is the pressure building a little bit from some of the government unions whose members are being impacted the most by this to maybe get back in and try to negotiate and adopt the Republican position?
Right. So AFGE, which represents government employees, their leadership is hearing from their members. And their members are getting really upset that they're not seeing movement. They're not seeing Republicans agree to sit down at the table with Democrats, right? And so they're pushing for an end to this. Now, the end needs to be that Republicans come to the table with Democrats. That has to be, right? The line in the sand is already there. We are not going to stand or allow the biggest threat to healthcare in this country. We're not going to vote yes on that. We're only going to vote yes if we can help prevent the catastrophe that will start January 1st, right? That's the line in the sand. And when I talk with people and I'm like, these aren't just Democrats. These are Republicans too. These are small business owners. These are farmers that buy their healthcare on the marketplace, right? They can't afford for it to go up by $800 a month. And I'm like, going without health insurance and you're doing a job that is dangerous as working on a farm? You can't go without health insurance. One person gets cancer, then you lose your farm, you know? And so people in Illinois are going to see their increases in their premiums go up by some 70 to 80%. Like, come on. We can't just agree to those so that workers go back to getting paid. Look, we've got to make sure that people are going to get paid in their ears. We have to make sure that every time you worked, you will get paid. And I think it is a travesty in this country that we would ever ask somebody to work without being paid. So going forward, we have to make sure that in whatever government shutdown there is in the future, that people are going to be paid during a shutdown.
I want to switch gears a little bit, Congressman, in the last 3 or 4 minutes we have here. The Democratic Party is going through a very intense discussion on its way forward after the very disappointing and in some ways catastrophic losses in the 2024 election, especially at the presidential level. It seems like it's kind of playing out in some of the elections taking place next week with the Democratic Socialist candidate of the Democratic Party for mayor of New York City. Looks like he's going to win. But then two moderate fellow members of Congress that you serve with running for governor of Virginia and New Jersey looking like they may win, although those races are tightening up a little bit. It, you know, it's like moderate versus more progressive. Philosophically middle of the road versus more, I guess, farther out on positions, all these different thoughts going on. You represent a district that's pretty close, a competitive district here in the Midwest, and there just aren't that many of those left. What's your vantage point? I know you're following this. I'm not asking you to take sides because I don't think that's you, because I think I know how you would answer that. But what are your thoughts as you're watching this debate take place?
Well, look, you know, I'm proud to be in the New Democrat Coalition. Those of us who are new Dems, we believe in working across the aisle. We believe that it takes people from all different walks of life and all different parts of the political spectrum to make good decisions. And I'm proud that Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey and that Abigail Spanberger in Virginia running these races are both proud New Dems. And so these are really, really great candidates that are going to serve their states and the Commonwealth well. And when it comes to New York, you know, our Democratic nominee will be a good mayor for New York. But let's also understand that New York isn't the rest of the world, right? In fact, I have personal conversations with our leader, Hakeem Jeffries. And he is very cognizant that I serve the great city of Peoria, Illinois. And I think everybody knows the phrase, will it play in Peoria? Okay. One of the very first conversations that I ever had with our leader, Hakeem Jeffries, he asked that. He said, what's going on in Peoria? Okay. And we have conversations very regularly about that. Right? Because he told me what works in Brooklyn is not going to work in Peoria, Illinois, but what works in Peoria will work in Brooklyn. Okay? And so this is a different place. This is a place where it takes a different kind of Democrat to win in Western Illinois. Right? Because we got to be able to say, screw the politics, let's find the solutions. I don't care if the solution, you know, is something that a Democrat came up with or a Republican came up with, as long as it is benefiting us in the long run. You know, and so I think going forward, it's going to take more people to speak in that way, right? To say, you know what, you may hate my politics and I may hate your politics, but let's find that commonality. Let's find that way. Just this morning at the airport, I was talking with a veteran who is a proud Republican. He lives in Alexis, Illinois. And he said, are you a Democrat or Republican? And I said, I'm a Democrat. He goes, oh, wrong party. And I said, wait a minute, wrong party? And then he said, could you tell me why members of Congress always come out so rich? And I said, yeah, I can tell you that. I said, it's because members of Congress, we learn a lot about how the economy works. And members of Congress trade stocks to make millions. And I said, and it's wrong. And I'm leading the charge against it to be able to make sure that members of Congress can't trade stocks. And guess what? I'm not a millionaire. I'm a thousandaire. There aren't many thousandaires in Congress, right? And so when people have made all of their money, they don't want to stop making money. Well, you know what? I'm different. And I'm going to lead the charge because that shouldn't happen. And this Republican goes, hey, wait a minute, you're starting to make sense. I might end up voting for you. That's the type of Democrat we need in this district, right? It's somebody that's okay talking with people on the other side to say, hey, you know, we may disagree on a whole lot of things, but all we need to agree with is just that one.
That's a good way to end up here. Some ways to help bring our country together. That's, I think, what everybody, yeah. Most people anyway, want.
Because it's worth it, Robin. It's worth it for all of us to do that, right? But if we don't do that, if we let the politics of division just ruin everything, what are we going to have in the end? We're certainly not going to be the leader that the world needs.
Congressman Eric Sorensen's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. Very, very much a pleasure to have you on, and thank you for your time.
Always good to be with you, Robin.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.